It's time for Eco Talk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
And welcome to Eco Talk, where you get the facts, you get them straight, and you get it often from the horse's mouth. And in this case, I am pleased to say that we have Senator Tom Daschle on our show. He just wrote a fabulous op-ed piece in the New York Times last week, and we have him for two segments. He's going to be talking about a new cafe, actually, new cafe standards. He has an idea that will get us away from the bickering over, you know, a mile here, a mile there. That's really not where we need to go right now. We'll also be talking about his strategy for development of ethanol as an alternative fuel for the U.S. In the second half of our hour, we will have Rebecca Callahan-Klein joining us. She's president of the Organic Exchange. She'll tell us why we should all support the organic cotton industry and what companies are leading the way and how we can do just that, support the organic cotton industry, which is growing but not fast enough, according to many, including us here at EcoTalk. Finally, we'll be chatting with Darby Hoover of the NRDC. She's going to tell us about their exciting new campaign aimed at college and university campuses across the country, trying to get students, who of course are the leaders of tomorrow, to use greener paper products. That's everything from office paper to toilet paper and Kleenex. And I can tell you the environmental effects of not using recycled content products are nothing to sneeze at. All that and more, but first we want to recognize those who make EcoTalk possible, the Natural Resources Defense Council and Earth Justice. So welcome, Senator Tom Daschle. Of course, Senator Daschle, the former Democratic Senate Majority Leader, now a fellow at the Center for American Progress. You wrote an essay called Miles Per Cob. What inspired you to talk about CAFE?
Well, my feeling is that we've been at a standstill, totally intransigent on this issue now for almost 30 years. And it's just too hard for me to accept the fact that there isn't another way to address the need for better fuel efficiency and to address probably a growing recognition that carbon, not necessarily oil, but carbon is something we're going to have to be more concerned about in the future. So trying to find ways to reduce our carbon and to move to perhaps a little more appropriate utilization of a new calculation on fuel efficiency based on carbon rather than oil made a lot of sense to me.
And we'll get to, let's just back up a bit and define CAFE standards. We talk about that here a lot because in addition to the host of EcoTalk, I'm also the founder of a grassroots campaign called Don't Be Fueled, fuel efficiency being one of my pet passions, and CAFE, of course, standing for Corporate Average Fuel Economy. First, tell us what changes the administration proposed and why they were not enough. This is the most recent proposal.
Well, what the administration wanted to do is to propose different standards for different vehicles. And the problem with that is that it's an easy way for the automobile manufacturers to get around standards at all. They can move from one vehicle and emphasize others based on overall fleet consumption and basically get out from under what limited restrictions or what limited incentives there are now to do the right thing and build stronger fleet averages that go way beyond where we are today. So it was just another sop to the car manufacturers at a time when we've got to go just in the opposite direction. We've got to get tougher. We've got to expect more. Other countries, other companies are doing that. We can, too.
And isn't it high time the automobile industry in this country stop just, you know, acting in the special interests, their own special interests, and more in the public interest with so much at stake, everything from our involvement in Iraq to the continuing threat of terrorism to global warming to epidemic childhood asthma?
Well, the irony in all of this is that by acting in the general best interest, they're actually improving their own special interest. If they would have done a better job at plug-in hybrids or all kinds of options for alternative fuel vehicles years ago, who knows where they would be in the market today. The fact is they continue to lose market share in part because of their intransigence. So this is an opportunity for them to become even more competitively viable, but also at the same time to do the right thing.
At the same time, most, if not all, of the car companies, I think with the exception of Honda, are still involved in litigation to try to stop California's clean air emissions crackdown legislation from going through. I mean, that kind of action doesn't give them a lot of credibility and give us consumers much hope that they're really starting to wake up and get it.
That's the problem, is that obviously their actions speak a lot louder than their words. I'm encouraged by the tremendous success of, say, the Prius, the hybrid vehicle that is now almost impossible to buy because of the demand. And, the people start to vote with their dollars and with their commitments and car sales, and we're beginning to see where the people are. The car companies just don't seem to appreciate that the people want to go in just the opposite direction, and those who respond are going to reap the benefit someday.
And since the administration proposal really pleased no one, not the car industry and not environmentalists who say it doesn't go far enough, you have an idea to look at it in a whole new way. Tell us about that and how that came to you.
Well, my belief is that as we begin to realize how much carbon we're going to have to reduce if we're going to deal with the very serious problems of climate change, that it isn't really just our fuel efficiency, but our carbon efficiency that ought to be taken into account for automobiles. And that, to me, presents a real opportunity, not a problem. The opportunity is for us to move away from a strict calculation of fuel intake to a more sophisticated appreciation of how much carbon a car is using. And we can easily demonstrate that. We already know from what Brazil has done. They've reduced their greenhouse gas emissions by 60% simply because they've moved away from an oil-dependent transportation system. We can do the same thing in this country. So we've got to look at oil savings, but we can do a lot more by reducing fossil fuel energy use and moving towards a carbon-reliant calculation rather than a simple fuel-reliant calculation.
And so you've proposed a new CAFE standard that would be the same acronym but stand for something different, Carbon Alternative Fuel Equivalent.
That's right. The Carbon Alternative Fuel Equivalent would simply give us an opportunity to measure just what degree of carbon a car is utilizing, and to the extent that they are actually reducing their carbon, they would be entitled to a significant tax incentive to produce even more. But it would be based on real fact, on real accomplishment, on achievement per unit, rather than some hypothetical goal that may or may not be reached in the future. If they reduce carbon, the next year they're entitled to this financial incentive. And with each additional increase in the degree of carbon reduction, they would be entitled to more and more of an economic incentive.
And, of course, one great way to reduce carbon is to use renewable fuels like biofuels, like ethanol in particular. And you're saying that by focusing on the traditional CAFE standard, there's no incentive to get away from petroleum-based fuels.
That's right. Today there's no incentive at all, other than the fact that the market is going there, and that you would think that'd be adequate incentive.
You would think.
But
there's a lot of counter-logical and intuitive things going on.
Exactly. But if there's ever a need for a public policy shift, the time has come for us to at least consider the possibility that with not only changes in the market, but changes in public policy, we can accelerate how quickly all of this happens.
Now, you talk about ethanol. You highlight that one above others, but you also say they all need to be explored and developed. Ethanol is controversial, as you know. What do you see as the pluses and minuses of that biofuel made, of course, from corn in most places?
Well, first of all, I'd say that the biggest advantage is that we are becoming less and less dependent upon a foreign source first, and a source for which there is a limited supply. We've already reached the tipping point in terms of the consumption and availability of oil. That happened in 1973, where ever since 73, we've actually been at a point where we're consuming more than we're discovering, and that has come down precipitously in recent years. Same is true with regard to our overall resources. We're actually drawing out more from the earth now than there is, and so we're reaching an even greater and greater negative balance every year. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, because of that energy independence, we really have an opportunity to create a new economy in this country, hopefully a carbonless economy that can move away from that carbon dependency and create sources right here at home. There's also a dramatic reduction in greenhouse gases. As I noted, Brazil has already seen reduced greenhouse gas emissions with 60% with ethanol. So there's an environmental, an economic, and a foreign policy dependency issue that all can be addressed with alternative biofuels.
And we're going to have to take a break in a moment. I'm happy to say you'll be with us in the next segment. And I want to, when we come back, drill down a little bit more into some of the advantages and disadvantages of wide-scale use of ethanol and also look at some of the other alternatives. And then just what you see on the political horizon in terms of leadership to really take us in this new direction that is so badly needed. Senator Tom Daschle, thanks for being with us this segment. Hang on, we'll be right back with more comments from Tom Daschle, of course, the former Democratic Senate Majority Leader, now a fellow at the Center for American Progress. Just wrote a great op-ed piece, by the way, with another pioneer, Vinod Khosla. He's the founder of Sun Microsystems, also a venture capitalist. It's called Miles Per Cob. You can find it online. You can find us online at www.ecotalk.net. We'll be right back.